Welcome to Module 5 of the Microsoft Partner Practice Enablement Bootcamp Training. My name is Rick Rainey, and I am a Microsoft Azure trainer and consultant for Opsgility, a training company focused on the Microsoft Azure platform. It is my pleasure to be your instructor for this module. You can contact me on Twitter at RickRaineyTX or through our website at Opsgility.com. The topic for this module is Cloud Services, Websites, and Infrastructure Services. On the agenda for today is first just a review of the Microsoft Azure Compute options. Specifically, we're going to be talking about Azure Cloud Services and Microsoft Azure Websites. Next, we're going to look at some of the integration techniques that you can use to connect cloud services and websites to virtual machines running in the background. So for example, perhaps you have a SQL server running in a virtual machine that you want to connect to. So we'll talk about those integration techniques along with some trade-offs that each of those bring. And then finally, in the last topic, I'm going to cover Azure Websites compute stack. In particular, I'm going to focus on tasks that are particularly suited for the IT professional. Seen this slide before, and we've spent most of our time talking about virtual machines. However, in this module, I'm going to be focusing on cloud services and websites. Cloud services is the original platform as a service, or PaaS, model for Microsoft Azure. And in this option, the platform takes care of things like the operating system so that you're not responsible for managing patches or doing disk management and other things related to managing a virtual machine. There is built-in application monitoring, which will automatically restart your application if there's ever a failure detected during a health check. And one of the other nice things about cloud services is it does away with the problem of configuration drift between server instances, because all instances of a cloud service are identical because they are provisioned from the exact same application package. Since cloud services are inherently easy to scale due to the stateless nature of the applications, they're well suited for pay-as-you-go computing and can pretty much handle the largest workloads that you can throw at them. Now, Microsoft Azure Websites is a web application hosting platform. And this is a platform that's perfectly suited for a large range of applications. It could be a digital agency that's creating, say, a marketing campaign site, or maybe you're an enterprise building a new line of business application. Whatever the need is, Microsoft Azure Websites is an extremely agile and robust platform for building these kinds of applications on. It's very simple to scale up and scale down websites, and it comes in a number of different pricing modes, which we'll get into during the presentation. Farthest to the right is the mobile services platform. We're not going to cover that in this module, but just a quick mention to you what this is. Mobile services empowers developers to quickly build a backend for mobile applications targeting, say, a Windows 8 device, Windows Phone device, iOS, Android, and even mobile apps for HTML or JavaScript. It's really simple to write powerful server-side scripts. You can authenticate users from multiple identity providers, and easily build data services for your application. Now again, this session is focused on cloud services and websites, and we're going to start by talking about cloud services. So I'm going to begin by talking about integration and why you would integrate with, say, a cloud service or an Azure website. When building applications using either of these platforms, there are some clear advantages to doing so. For one, there is less management and overhead, and it's just easier to scale up and down when the need arises. However, new applications are oftentimes not created in isolation and will have dependencies on applications or services that is not going to be easily accessible from, say, the sandbox of that particular compute model. So being able to provide a solid and secure method for connecting to services such as SQL Server or MongoDB or even Oracle that run in a virtual machine is a great solution, giving you the best of both worlds. Having the ability to innovate on these computing platforms for new applications, yet also have the ability and capability to connect to services running in their own infrastructure, such as a database, for example, is a great mix of platform features in Microsoft Azure. A scenario that's conducive to this kind of integration is one with hybrid connectivity in mind. As new applications are built and deployed in the cloud, some of the resources that these applications depend on may not go with them. For example, there may be data repositories or web services that will stay on premises. And with virtual machines and virtual networks providing the migration on-ramp, these new applications are able to access the resources without the barriers of data locality. So let's spend a little time talking about cloud services. The kind of application that works well with cloud services is one that's designed from the start to be stateless. Cloud services do not have persistent storage on virtual machine instances, and the load balancer does not support sticky affinity sessions. So for ease of management and ease of scale, designing applications to be stateless from the start is critical. Cloud services provide a rich model for describing, deploying, and communicating across tiers, and even scaling different tiers independently. So this makes cloud services a fantastic solution for deploying in-tier architectures. So let's take a look now at the architecture for cloud services. So just to recall from the earlier sessions, we learned that a cloud service acts as a container that contains a virtual machine or set of virtual machines. And with traditional cloud services, the model is a little bit different. A cloud service contains multiple roles, and a role is simply a definition of part of the application. So for example, a role could be a web role hosting a website, or it could be a worker role, and that worker role could be pulling orders from a queue and processing them in the background. It can really be whatever the developer for the application decides it needs to be. There may be multiple roles inside of a cloud service, and each role can be scaled independently by specifying the number of instances to spin up. The scaling can be changed at runtime manually or automatically using autoscale, which is a feature that we'll cover in a later module. A powerful feature in the cloud services model is this ability to have multiple deployment environments for staging and production. Cloud services support a deployment feature called a VIP swap or virtual IP swap. The way this works is when you are ready to deploy a version of your application, you would do so by deploying it to the staging environment first. After you have validated that your deployment is working as expected in the staging environment, you then perform a VIP swap, which takes the production virtual IP and changes it to the new application deployed in staging, and the former production application is now in the staging slot. This swap can be performed manually or automated using the Azure PowerShell commandlets or even a REST API. So let's talk a little bit about the comparison between these stateless web and worker roles to the virtual machine models that we've seen in the past. At the API level, a virtual machine is really just a single instance role. What's unique about cloud services is that each one of these roles, the virtual machine instances, can be scaled independently. So if you wanted to scale your web role to 6 or 7 instances, then you could do that and keep your worker role at, say, 2 or 3 instances. Compare this to the traditional virtual machine configuration for cloud services, where you really just get a single unique instance, which is the virtual machine itself. For these two types of compute models, they cannot be deployed in the same cloud service. So, for example, you can't have a web role and a SQL Server virtual machine in the same cloud service. That's why you see in the diagram here, cloud service 1 has web roles and worker roles. Cloud service 2 has virtual machines, and those virtual machines could be SQL Server, for example. And so that leads into the next slide, which is talking about different ways that you can integrate or connect between the two types of cloud services. There are basically two ways to connect cloud services to virtual machines. The first option is to connect directly, but just using public endpoints. So like we learned in the networking session, it's pretty easy to open up a public endpoint on a virtual machine and just allow a connection in. The second option is to use a virtual network. So just like what we saw with virtual machines, cloud services can be deployed directly into the same virtual network that your virtual machines are running in. So this gives you the ability to directly access all of the resources on the virtual machine from your cloud service application. So let's review this model in more detail. For example, let's use a web role hosting a website in Cloud Service 1 and a SQL Server backend being hosted in Cloud Service 2. Some of the strengths here is, first, the model is really pretty simple because there's no complexity of virtual networking that you have to worry about. You also have tenant autonomy, so the cloud service application is completely separate from the cloud service hosting the virtual machine. And in fact, they don't even have to be in the same Azure subscription. And then finally, as far as, you know, being easy to do local dev and test, this is because the services exposed by the virtual machine can be consumed on the developer or tester workstation using the public endpoints. Now, some of the weaknesses are, first, since the application is accessing the service from behind a load balancer, and the other service is also behind a load balancer, there is going to be two hops at least to make that request. Now, there isn't a great deal of latency as long as the two are in the same data center, but it is measurable. And since there is a service listening on a public endpoint, you are responsible for securing that endpoint and any others that the service needs to make available to application. So let's take a look now at a demo where we connect a cloud service using VIP connectivity to a SQL Server running in a virtual machine. In this demonstration, I'm going to show how to connect a Microsoft Azure Cloud Service to a SQL Server that's running in a virtual machine. As part of the demonstration, I'm also going to show how you can use access control lists to restrict access to the SQL Server virtual machine from the cloud service. So to get things started, I'm going to show you how the SQL Server virtual machine is set up. This was a SQL Server image from the gallery, and I just added an extra endpoint for port 1433 during the setup. So you'll see that right here. I also added to the virtual machine two data disks. So you'll see those right here in the dashboard. So there's a data disk for the SQL Server database files, as well as a data disk for the SQL Server log files. So next I'm going to show you the actual virtual machine configuration itself so you can see how things are set up on the virtual machine. All right, so this here is the SQL Server virtual machine. It's already got SQL Server installed and running. It has what you'd expect in order to connect to it. I opened up port 1433. Next, I want to show you the two data disks that I attached to the virtual machine. So there is a drive F and a drive G. If you go in and look at drive F, you'll notice that there is an AdventureWorks SQL Server database file in the data folder. And if I go back to the G drive, which is the second disk, in the logs folder is where the AdventureWorks log file is. By spreading these files across the two attached data disks, it will improve performance of the SQL Server virtual machine. The last thing I'm going to show is the SQL Server configuration. So in here you'll see that we have the AdventureWorks 2012 database, and there is a login called demo user, which is what we're going to be using to connect to the AdventureWorks database from the cloud service. All right, so the cloud service that I'm going to be connecting to the SQL Server virtual machine is called CloudShop, And as you might expect, there is some connection strings that need to be updated in the cloud service so that it can connect to the SQL Server virtual machine. And since the virtual machine is running in a logical container known as a cloud service, what we need to do is replace the connection string with the cloud service URL. Going back to the Azure Management Portal, here is the virtual machine that I showed earlier. And if you look up here in the upper right corner, there is a DNS name called cloudshopsqlservice.cloudapp.net. So that is the public URL that I can use to access the virtual machine. And this is what I'm going to use in the connection string. So I'm going to replace this right here with that URL. And there's one other place in here that needs to be updated, and that is right here. Now, of course, the other thing I need to do is, as you can see here, I have a user ID and password. Normally you wouldn't put these in clear text in config, but since this is just a demo, we will do that. And there was also another one on this connection string up here. All right, so now we have everything updated. Next, I'm going to package the cloud service, and then we'll get ready to deploy it to an Azure cloud service. Okay, so here are my package files that just got created, and I'm going to upload these to Azure, but first I need to create the cloud service, so I'll do that next. And on this screen, you can see I have the option to select a couple of files from my local computer, which will be the two files I showed just previously, the two package files. The first one is the cloud service package. And the next one is a configuration file. I'm going to deploy this to the production environment. And this will take a few minutes to complete, so we will come back to this in just a minute. Now you can see the Cloud Shop web service has been created and deployed. So I'm going to go ahead and try and run this now, just to make sure it all works. And here we can see that the Cloud Shop web application has loaded, and it's actually just the fact that we see products in the product list is validation that it actually is reading from the SQL Server running in a virtual machine. So what I'm going to do in this last demo is show how we can lock down that SQL Server virtual machine endpoint, that public endpoint that we're communicating over, so that only this cloud service application can access the virtual machine on that endpoint. So to do that, I'm going to go back to the portal, and I'm going to go just revisit the virtual machine for the SQL Server, which is this Cloud Shop SQL. And I'm going to go look at the endpoints, and you'll remember here we have this MS SQL endpoint on port 1433, and it's a public endpoint. Obviously, you need to know the credentials to access the virtual machine, but anybody can try and access the virtual machine on that public endpoint. So what we want to do is lock this down so that only the cloud service is able to access the SQL Server on that endpoint. To do that, I'm going to go back to the cloud service that we just deployed, the Cloud Shop web service. I'm going to grab its virtual IP address, which is right here. And going back to the Cloud Shop SQL VM, I'm going to click the Manage ACL button down here at the bottom. And I'm going to give this a description, just call this Allow Cloud Service Access. and permit, and we're going to give it the IP address for the cloud service web application. Okay, so now that that ACL has been applied to that endpoint, the final thing I'm going to do is just go back and rerun the Cloud Shop web application just to make sure that we're still able to access this database. So I'm just going to do a refresh, and indeed we can see the list of products in the list. So to wrap up, in this demo I showed you how to connect a cloud service to a SQL server running in a virtual machine, and then we looked at how you can further secure access to that SQL server running in the virtual machine by using an access control list on the MS SQL endpoint. The other option for connecting cloud services to a virtual machine backend is to use a virtual network. Now, there are many strengths to taking this approach. First of all, there's less hops. Since you're not going through the public load balancer, that obviously means you don't have that extra latency that we talked about previously. There's no public endpoints to secure, so from a security perspective, this is a simpler approach. And since the cloud service and the virtual machines are on the same network, this allows for applications that have advanced connectivity requirements, such as DCOM and Active Directory. Now, there are some weaknesses. The first is, you know, virtual networks are a little bit more complex to configure, and unless you deploy your own DNS server, the connection strings between your cloud service and your SQL server will have to be based on the IP address, because the built-in Microsoft Azure DNS service doesn't span cloud services. And the final point is, if you want to do local development and test against the virtual machine and the virtual network from a machine that's outside of that virtual network, then you're going to have to either open a public endpoint, as we've seen before, or configure either point-to-site networking or site-to-site networking so that you have that direct connectivity to the virtual machine. So let's now see a demo connecting a cloud service to a SQL Server virtual machine using virtual network connectivity. In this demonstration, I'm going to show how to deploy a SQL Server running in a virtual machine into a Azure virtual network. And in this demonstration, I'm also going to show how to deploy a cloud service that is connecting to that SQL Server virtual machine for its data. So it'll be very much like the last demo. The only difference is the virtual machine and the cloud service will be running in a virtual network. So just to set the stage for the environment, let me show you the virtual network that I've already created. The network is called SQL VNet, and in the network right now I have one resource, which is the SQL Server running in a virtual machine, and you'll notice that it has an IP address of 10.0.0.4. If I look at the configuration for the virtual network, you'll see how I have the subnets configured. I have a SQL subnet with this range, and then I have a cloud service subnet that's got this range, and that's going to be the subnet that we deploy the cloud service into. Now, this virtual machine, let me go back to the virtual machine and show you how that's configured. So here is the virtual machine, and you'll notice it's in a different cloud service than the last demo. It's in a, this one's called Cloud Shop SQL Service Net.cloudop.net. But what's different about this deployment is there is no public endpoint for MS SQL port 1433. And that's because we're going to be connecting to the virtual machine through the virtual network and using its IP address, which is 10.0.0.4. The SQL Server virtual machine itself is configured pretty much the exact same way as last time. So it has the AdventureWorks database already on it. It has the demo user that we're going to use to connect to SQL Server from the cloud service. So all that's still the same. Okay, so now I'm going to show how to configure the cloud service to connect to the SQL Server virtual machine. And just like last time, we'll start by modifying the connection strings in the configuration file. So this is my cloud service, and in the web config is the two connection strings that I'm going to have to update. This time I'm going to be updating with the IP address of the virtual machine in the virtual network instead of the cloud service URL that I used in the last demo. And if you recall, there was actually two connection strings that need to be updated. So we'll do that here. Okay, so that has the configuration updated for the cloud service web application. So next, I'm going to update the cloud service configuration to add virtual network configuration to that file. So when I deploy this cloud service to Azure, the Azure environment needs to know that I want to put this in a virtual network. And so the configuration I'm going to add here will take care of that. And if you recall, the name of my virtual network is SQL VNet. The role name is just simply the name of my cloud service. So if you look over in the roles over here in Visual Studio, it's Cloud Shop. So I'll just put that in there. And the subnet name is the name of my subnet in the virtual network that I want to deploy this cloud service into. If you recall from the portal, that is this subnet right here. So cloud service is the subnet that I'm going to deploy into. And that's it. So now my cloud service has the configuration necessary for Azure to deploy this into my virtual network. So now I just need to build and package this solution. I'll go ahead and rebuild it just to make sure everything compiles. And now I'm going to package the solution. Okay, so just like before, I'm going to start by clicking New, Compute, Cloud Service, and we'll do a custom create. And here is where I'll select the two files for my deployment, the package file and the configuration file. Okay, so the cloud service has deployed. So let me show you real quickly before I run the app, just how this looks in the virtual network. So what you'll notice here is the single instance virtual machine for my cloud service is deployed into the cloud service subnet, and it's picked up an IP address of 10.32.0.4, which is in the range for that subnet. And again, it's going to be communicating to the Cloud Shop SQL server running in a virtual machine at this address, 10.0.0.4. Remember, that's what I put in the configuration for the web application. Go back to the cloud service briefly. And let's take a look at this. And as you can see here, the virtual machine is starting at this point, so we'll give this just a minute to finish warming up, and then we'll run the application. Okay, so now the cloud service instance is up and running. So what's left now is just to try it out. And there is our list of products. Again, just like last time, just the fact that we see the products in the list is validation that we're actually retrieving the data from the SQL server running in the virtual machine. Again, the difference in this case is that we connected to the virtual machine through the virtual network and its IP address 10.0.0.4 instead of going through the public internet. All right, so we're going to continue moving to the right of the stack, And we're going to take a look at Microsoft Azure websites in this next section. Microsoft Azure websites are the easiest and fastest option for deploying new web applications in Microsoft Azure. You can start with a free option for simple development and test, and then easily scale up to more powerful scenarios with the shared and standard models. There's also command line tools that are available that will run on Windows, Mac, and even Linux, so you can automate the management and deployment of your websites. Best of all, deployment is practically instantaneous, so it's very easy to quickly iterate in this model. Using the Azure Management Portal, there are three ways to create a website. You can also do this using command line tools like PowerShell, but for the sake of discussion, I'm going to stick with the portal experience. So the first option is simply to use a quick create of a website. Essentially what this does is it sets up your website environment, so like things like the location or the region it's going to run in, and the URL for the website. An analogy to the on-premises world would be, say, opening IIS Manager and just simply creating a new website. In other words, you have a site, but you don't have any content. Next is the custom create option. And here you essentially create an empty website, but you also have the option to configure or link as a resource a database to your website. You have the option of setting up deployment from source control with this option. However, generally speaking, you'll want to do this kind of source control publishing into a staging environment, which can be configured separately. And I'll talk more about that one later. And last is the option to create a website from the gallery. The gallery has all kinds of starter websites and frameworks for various types of web applications. And using the gallery, you basically get a fully functioning site with content that you can use as a starting point for your application. After you have your website created, you have basically three ways to publish the content to the site. You can use good old-fashioned FTP and, say, an FTP client like FileZilla. Developers, though, are generally going to use WebDeploy from Visual Studio or the command line to publish website content. And the last option is to use Git. This option is often done in an automated fashion using the available service hooks to trigger a deployment. Publishing website content can also be done using popular command line tools and scripting. This gives you the ability to automate the deployment process. You have a number of choices if your environment is Windows. So for example, you could use MS Build or PowerShell. But there's also cross-platform tools or CLI tools that are available if you're running, say, from a Mac or Linux machine. And if you're taking advantage of continuous integration processes in publishing from source control, then you can trigger deployments as source code changes are checked into the repository, usually to a staging deployment slot for the website. So what exactly is this deployment slot? It's literally a separate website that's linked to your primary website. It has its own URL and is often referred to as a staging website. This deployment slot is something that you have to configure. It's not provided for you automatically, but it's a good idea to have one so that you can stage your site before going live. And again, if you're publishing content from source control, then you almost always will want to target a staging environment for that scenario. The use of a deployment slot in this manner is referred to as staged publishing. And to summarize, it gives you the option to stage your site, test it, warm it up, or whatever it is you want to do before swapping with your production environment to go live. If you recall from the previous topic, when we talked about cloud services and VIP swap procedures, where you're swapping between staging and production environments, this is essentially the same thing. Having these two environments enables going live with confidence, as well as a way to swap back if a new deployment is not working as expected. Publishing from source control is just a fantastic feature and something that most web development teams expect to be present in a cloud platform. And Azure provides service hooks for many of the common source control providers out of the box. If you don't see your source control provider on this screen, then you can still configure it using the external repository option that provides support for Git and Mercurial repositories. Now that you know some of the basics of what Microsoft Azure websites are and why you might use them, let's examine a scenario where you have a back-end SQL server that's running on a Microsoft Azure virtual machine. This scenario is very similar to the benefits of connecting to a back-end SQL server in a virtual machine using cloud services. The virtual machine itself can be a management overhead, but depending on the application, the trade-off is basically to enable you to host a significant portion of your application in a managed platform like Azure Websites. And this alone usually far outweighs the downsides of also hosting services in a virtual machine to run that website on. Microsoft Azure Websites only supports connectivity through the public VIP. So scenarios or applications that require things like DCOM and Active Directory, those are not going to be easily available without some server-side changes, such as configuration or possibly creating a wrapper API. So in this lab, let's take a look at how you can connect websites to a SQL Server virtual machine running in the back end using virtual IP connectivity. In this demonstration, I'll show how to configure SQL Server running on a Azure virtual machine. Then I'm going to create a Microsoft Azure website from the gallery, and then we're going to establish a connection from the website to SQL Server running on that virtual machine. So let's get started by creating the virtual machine. I'm naming the virtual machine Orchard SQL, and that's because the website is going to be a Orchard website. Okay, so the SQL Server virtual machine has been configured and is being created right now by Azure. So as soon as this completes, we'll come back and configure the virtual machine. Okay, so now that we can see that the virtual machine has been configured and is up and running, I want to review just real quickly the endpoints. Notice here that we do have the MS SQL endpoint on port 1433, and that's because we're going to be connecting to the virtual machine from the Orchard website using this endpoint. Now, the next part of this demo is simply going to be configuring the SQL Server instance running on this virtual machine. So, to do that, I'm going to go back to the SQL Server and I'm just going to now connect to this virtual machine. Okay, so the first thing I need to do in this virtual machine instance is open up an inbound rule on port 1433. Okay, so now we're allowing inbound traffic on port 1433. And so the next step is going to be to actually configure SQL Server for the Orchard database that we're going to create. All right, so the first thing I'm going to do is change the server to allow SQL authentication as well as Windows authentication. Okay, so now I'm going to create a new database for Orchard. And I'll call this Orchard DB. And then the last part is to actually add a login for the user account that we're going to use to connect to the database from our website application. So this user will be using the SQL authentication, so we're just going to use our demo user that we've been using in previous demos. And I'm going to uncheck the enforce password policy so we don't have to reset that. I'm going to set the default database to OrchardDB for this user login. And now I'm going to add this user to the Orchard database. All right, so now we have the Orchard database created and we have a login created to connect to that database. Now in the last part of this demonstration, I'm going to now create a website using one of the websites in the gallery, and we're going to configure that website to connect to the SQL server that we just configured. The website that I'm going to create is an Orchard content management system, and I'm choosing that one just simply because it has a dependency on a SQL Server backend. So I'll start by creating a new website, and this time I'm going to select from gallery. And we're going to select Orchard. All right, so now the website's been created, so I'm just going to drill into the dashboard. I'm going to grab the URL for this website, which is this right here, orcharddemosite.azurewebsites.net. I'm going to open a new session. And so that's what we see right here on this screen. So first of all, what's the name of the site? This can be anything you want it to be. And the username and password is just the admin credentials that you're going to use to administer the Orchard system. And down here, you'll notice there's an option to select your data store. And I'm going to select the option to use an existing SQL Server. And when I select that option, it obviously is going to ask me for a connection string. And it's even given me a little template to start with here. So I'll go ahead and paste that in. And then we'll just kind of fill this in as we go. So the first thing is the data source. And so that's actually our cloudapp.net URL for our SQL Server virtual machine. You can get that from the portal. If we go back to our virtual machines, and here's our Orchard SQL virtual machine. And over here, you'll see the DNS name. That's the cloudapp URL that I just was referring to. So we're going to connect to that. So that's our data source. The next one is the initial catalog, and if you remember when I was configuring the database, I just called it OrchardDB, so I won't go back and show that. And just like we've been doing with all the other demos, we'll use the demo user. And so now this is configuring the database for Orchard. And now we can see that the Orchard demo site is up and running. And just to show what happened on the SQL Server, let me go back to that virtual machine. And I'm going to open up the Orchard DB, and I'm going to show the tables here. You'll see there's quite a few tables that were created as a result of that initial configuration for the website. Okay, so now that we've looked at some integration techniques for connecting websites and cloud services to virtual machines, I want to shift gears a bit and talk about tasks specific to IT professionals for managing and configuring Azure websites. And we'll start by talking about custom domains and SSL. So before I talk about custom domains, let's just start with the default domain that all Azure websites are given, which is azurewebsites.net. So if your site name is Contoso, then your default domain is contoso.azurewebsites.net. And when you browse to that domain name, it is resolved to the IP address of the load balancer for the server cluster that your site is deployed in. Now with a custom domain, you're able to effectively remove the azurewebsites.net portion of the domain and use your own domain, such as contoso.com. Now this is achieved through DNS records that you set up with your domain registrar. For Azure websites, the record types of interest are going to be A records and CNAME records. A records resolve a domain name to a specific IP address. In this example on the screen, the domain contoso.com resolves to the load balancer addressed at 138.92.225.40. Again, this is not the IP address of the virtual machine running the site. It is the IP address of the cluster that my website is in. Something else to note here is that if the IP address of the cluster your site is in were to change, then your A record must be updated. The other record type is a CNAME record, short for canonical name. These are used to verify that you actually own the domain name. In this example, you can have a CNAME for www.contoso.com that maps to contosoweb.azurewebsites.net. Or you could use the awverify.contoso.com that maps to awverify.contosoweb.azurewebsites.net. The awverify name is a unique name for Azure websites. The DNS records, as I said, they're managed through your DNS registrar, and each registrar may have different requirements for using A records and or CNAME records. The information that you're going to need to configure these records with your registrar can be found in the Azure Management Portal in the Domain Names section of the Configure page. Simply click the button to manage the domains and you will be able to see the information you will need to configure A records and CNAME records with your registrar. Now I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about SSL with Azure websites. So the first thing to point out here is that all Azure websites have SSL support out of the box. There's no configuration needed. Just simply navigate to the URL using HTTPS and it's just going to work. Now the story changes obviously when it comes to using SSL with a custom domain. First, you're going to have to upgrade to either a basic or standard mode if you want to support SSL using your custom domain. After you have scaled your website to basic or standard mode, you can configure SSL bindings using either server name indication or SNI or the traditional IP-based SSL binding. Many of the modern applications today in operating systems are SNI SSL aware. With SNI, you also can have multiple domains sharing the same IP address. To configure SSL, the first step is to obtain your SSL certificate from a certificate authority. Next, in the Azure Management Portal, just upload the certificate and provide the password. And then after the certificate is uploaded, you can configure the SSL bindings using either SNI or IP-based SSL. A couple of things to be aware of about IP-based SSL. First, if you choose this option, a dedicated IP address will be assigned to your website. This is different from the load balancer IP address that I mentioned earlier. And you can find this in the quick glance section of the dashboard page of your website. If you use this binding, then you need to update the A record with your registrar to use this IP address. All right, so let's talk about scalability of websites. So you basically have two options for scaling websites. You can scale up or you can scale out. So let's review the scaling up option first. You can scale the size of your virtual machine instance from a small or one core instance virtual machine to say a medium. And in the medium size, you get two cores, twice the RAM, and 10 gigs of storage. Now you could scale to a large size and get four cores or 7 gigs of RAM and 50 gigs of storage. So depending on the resource requirements for your application, you do have some options for scaling up to a virtual machine size that fits your needs. Now you also have some options for scaling out to multiple instances as needed. For example, in a shared mode, you can scale out to six shared instances. These are called shared because you're sharing the underlying virtual machine resources with other website owners. Whereas with basic and standard, you can scale out to 3 and 10 dedicated instances respectively. In basic and standard, you get dedicated instances where you are not sharing resources with other website owners. Here's a table that outlines the different scale limits for the various web hosting plans. Remember, free and shared have quotas, and your site will be throttled in these plans, whereas with basic and standard, they are dedicated and impose no quotas or throttling on your website. Also, remember that with basic or standard, which again are dedicated instances, you have the additional options to scale up or down the size of the virtual machine that best fits the needs of your application. So a relatively new feature of Microsoft Azure Websites is the ability to back up and restore your websites. With Website Backup, you're able to back up and restore services for your website, and you're able to back up linked resources, so for example, your databases. Now, this does require that you be in standard mode, and obviously, it requires that you have a storage account as well already set up in the same subscription that your website is deployed in, because your backups are stored as blobs in your blob storage account. Now, backups can be either automated or they can be performed manually. If automated, you can specify a schedule of when you want your backups to occur. So, if you want them to be backed up every night at 2 a.m., then you can schedule that. The content that's backed up in your website includes your website files and content, its configuration, and again, any linked resources, specifically SQL databases and MySQL are the two that are supported. The Azure backups, as I mentioned, are stored as blobs in your blob storage account, and they're going to be in a container named Website Backups. And each backup is going to consist of a zip file, which is basically the contents of your backup, and an XML file, which basically is the manifest for the contents in the zip file. Now, when it comes time to restoring the website from backup, you have basically two choices for restore targets. You can restore to your current website that you backed up from, or you can restore to a new website. If you restore to your current website, then the existing website is going to be overwritten with the data in the backup. If you restore to a new website, then this is going to create a new website in the same region that your website that was backed up is in, and it's also going to prefix the name with restored in front of the website name. So if your website is called Contoso, then the restored website name would be restored-contoso. And as for the restore targets for your database, you can basically choose none, or you can restore to a different database server completely, or you can restore to the original database. So I want to introduce you now to site control. Site Control Management, or SCM, in the Azure Websites platform. This is also known as Kudu. Many people refer to this as the Kudu site. So, just what is Kudu? It's essentially a companion website to your Azure website that can be used to perform various administrative and diagnostics tasks. It's also the engine that drives Git deployments in Azure Websites. Now, every website gets a Kudu site automatically. You don't have to do anything to set it up. It's just there. And through Kudu, you can easily access the runtime environment that your website is running in, which includes things like application settings, environment variables, as well as the shared file system that is used across all instances of your website. You can get the IIS logs, the HTTP logs, process dumps for debugging, and much more from the Kudu site. Now, to access Kudu, simply insert .scm after your website name in the URL, and make sure you do this with HTTPS, not HTTP. When you browse to the Kudu URL, you will have to authenticate to Kudu. And when you do that, you just use the same credentials that you use to sign in to the Azure Management Portal. Kudu is an open source project that you can find on GitHub at the URL that's shown here. So if you wanted to contribute to the project or just read up on some of the documentation that's really quite extensive, you can do that there. Kudu can also be hosted independently if you wanted to do that. It's simply a site extension to your website, and this makes it an ideal tool for managing the site. But you can also create your own site extensions. For example, maybe you want to have an admin portal for your site that only service and co-administrators of your subscription can access. A Kudu site extension would be a quick and easy fit for something like that. This is a screenshot of the gallery of website extensions that you can add to your Kudu site. This list of extensions continues to evolve, and to install one of these, you just simply click on the plus icon at the top of the panel, and within a few seconds, you're going to have that new functionality available in your Kudu site. So to wrap things up, in this session, we talked about the compute models in Microsoft Azure. We revisited the virtual machines, and then we really went deep on cloud services and websites. We saw how to use cloud services to create highly scalable, stateless applications that can integrate with applications and services running on virtual machines. And we looked at this in two ways, one by connecting through a secure endpoint, and also by connecting directly using a virtual network. We also learned how Microsoft Azure websites can be used to easily deploy, manage, and scale web applications, and how we can integrate the Azure website with applications and services running on virtual machines using public endpoints. We also saw how you can enable auto-scale. And then finally, we wrapped up by just talking about some of the tasks that are specific to Azure websites for IT professionals. These are some suggested learning exercises to augment the learning experience for this module. It includes hands-on labs as well as some videos. And here are some session resources, again, specific to this module. These are some Microsoft Azure resources that are not necessarily specific to this module, but just good overall Azure resources. And at the bottom, you'll see if you have any questions, there are links to Stack Overflow and the Microsoft forums where you can ask questions about Microsoft Azure platform. Coming up next, we'll talk about SQL Server and SharePoint workloads in Microsoft Azure. Thank you very much.